Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Ashley Kopovich, Regional Director at CREXI, and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics and conversations with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news in commercial real estate. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kopovich, Regional Director at CREXI. And today we are thrilled to sit down with Mike Spears, Managing Principal at Lee & Associates Houston. A little bit about our guest. Mike Spears, who has SIOR and CCIM designations, has established a remarkable career spanning over 22 years with more than $1.5 billion in transactions. He specializes in the greater Houston area, focusing on industrial property, land, and investment sales. Before his affiliation with Lee & Associates, Mike spent 15 years with TNRG, serving as the company's president for 7 years, where he was involved in over 700 transactions, including leasing, sales, and industrial project development. In addition to his commercial real estate success, Mike is an active member of the Society of Industrial and Office Realtors, SIOR, an exclusive nationally recognized organization whose members produce at the top of their respective markets while upholding the highest ethical standards. He also holds the designation of CCIM, Certified Commercial Investment Member, and is a National Association of Industrial and Office Professional, NAOP, member. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, we are so lucky to have you. I know you've been a huge CREXI fan and proponent for so long, so it is my personal honor to be interviewing you today. So thank you for taking the time to sit down with us.
You bet.
So, first topic, I know we covered a lot about your background, but I'd love to briefly hear more about your career path and lessons you've learned along the way. So tell us more about where you're from and how you first got your start in commercial real estate.
I mean, I kind of lucked into it, to be honest. I mean, I'm from a small town northwest of Fort Worth called Jacksboro, although we really had a commercial real estate industry there, but went to school in down in San Marcos or Texas State University. It was Southwest Texas when I went there, but they changed the name. It's a big school. It's just next to the University of Texas. And, you know, basically got out of school, worked in Austin for about a year, was part of a tech company. It was really cool. Learned a lot being there. It's just, the company kept growing and growing and growing. And I started realizing this really wasn't what I wanted to do. And I, you know, was kind of in a, couldn't quite figure it out. Right. I knew I was probably, I'd say gifted it to some level in the sales world. And I was doing less and less of the sales stuff and, you know, kind of really doing a little bit of everything, but, you know, had a person that I knew from school, her dad was, I'd become good friends with him as well. And I, you know, reached out to him. He said he had a partner in Houston that was in the commercial real estate business. Had me come up really just to meet the person. I was coming to visit anyway and sat in and met with him. And they were supposed to give me some guidance on how to, you know, like what different paths to go into the industry and what were options available and all that. And, you know, by the time we were done talking, I'd convinced him to hire me. And he did. Don Eastfield at TNRG and, you know, learned a ton working there and joined and after a while, obviously became a partner and the president. We had me running the brokerage there, which we built it up. I mean, when I came on board, there were two other brokers and a property manager and a developer. And when we decided to leave to become Lee, we had 18 brokers and 5 property managers, 5 developers, and a whole slew of other staff and people that were really making really had a machine working there. I think probably what I learned best there was something a lot of people take for granted. I didn't realize. I thought everybody did what we were doing, which was a lot of speculative development. And, you know, really there's an entirely different lens from just a typical brokerage business when you're actually doing this development project, because you're taking a lot of risk, but you're, you know, we would really as simple as just basically working in a certain submarket and realizing, hey, there's 10 requirements out right now for 25,000 foot building with an acre of storage, outside storage. And there wasn't in that market. And you'd go walking in the development department with tract of land, they'd build 5 of them, you know, or 10 of them. And we learned a lot about ownership too, which was interesting because that we would get a piece of the deal and we got to invest in the deals. And so it was just kind of something that kind of I thought was the norm and didn't realize until later, way later, that that's really not, that's a little bit different. But it did teach me, I think, quite frankly, learning to be an owner, learning how to look at it from a developer and an owner standpoint really helped me become a better broker too, and helped me to represent both my clients, the landlords, as well as my clients, the tenants, better in the different ways, because it gives you a kind of a unique perspective there. So that was something that, again, sheer luck, I ended up in Houston. And I guess the rest is kind of history from there. You know, we built it up to the point where the brokerage was really becoming a very profitable entity versus kind of what it was originally there for. Originally it was there just kind of to source deals, keep the buildings leased, and if it made a little money, it made a little money. But as we built it, I started bringing in friends from college and other people I ran into and started interviewing and did internship program, did all that stuff, and realized, you know, we had something there. And Houston was becoming more and more institutional in nature. I also, you know, my partner, Don, great guy, great mentor, but he didn't have any desire to really grow the brokerage any further than it had already grown, and really looked at it. And I think that in order to really grow a brokerage, you have to, at least my philosophy is going to be that brokers at some point, they want more as they produce more. And at some point you can't just keep giving them more from the commission standpoint, because you go out of business, you won't make any money. And so the alternative is offer them some ownership, offer them a seat at the table. And mm-hmm. We didn't quite have that set up or that model there. And so when Lee came around, I'd looked at several firms, possibly moving the team over there, and with Don, being on board with it as well. And, none of them really had the entrepreneurial spirit that I really wanted to keep, which was, we buy buildings, we can develop properties, we do all these different things that we had at TNRG. And then Lee came around and it was, man, honestly, it was, once we kind of got into it, I started realizing it was pretty much, we changed our business card. That's all we had to do. And we did that, merged with Chris Lewis's group from Griffin Partners, and it was an office group. We were mainly industrial, and came Lee, and it's been a great move. It's something that we have, really allowed all of us to flourish in the brokerage business in general. And, we've grown the company now to north of 40 brokers, and we're very active in the on the national side as well. I'm on the board of directors. I've been on the board of directors for a few years now, and we're expanding as a company nationwide too. We're now up to 75 offices. We just literally just opened the Baton Rouge office, the Lafayette office, Calgary office. These are literally within the last month. So it's expanding kind of at the same rate we did. So it was interesting that Houston was running at this parallel path that our national organization was running. So it's an interesting story, at least from my standpoint, but it happened a lot quicker than you would have thought. And it's funny, you can get in the weeds and then look up one, thinking, man, this is, if you were trudging along, and then you look up and you're like, wow, this happened fast. We're a lot bigger company and a lot different company than we were when we first started. So that's how I ended up here. A lot of luck.
I mean, I think that what is the saying? Success is a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck, put together, and there you go. And it seems like you've had a huge trajectory of it. Maybe that initial person might have been a love interest dad or something like that. Yeah, that the case?
You're gonna bring that up. It was my girlfriend's dad. Yes, my girlfriend's dad. I left that out, but. Yes,
we all were reading between the lines, though, Mike. It's right. Okay.
Well, hey, for the record, he ended up being a groomsman in my wedding. Didn't marry.
That's amazing.
Very good friends with her and her husband. One of my best friends. We vacationed with them. Yep. So, it was a good ending. It worked out real well for all.
It's a great ending and got you to where you were, and beautiful story on that. But I really think especially in the commercial industry, everyone is going to say this. It's really about who you know and making sure that you're making those connections. And just in that story that you told us, you talked a lot about different mentors and your partner Don, and how they shaped your career and being a part of the first place that you were at. that, you got a chance to see both sides of the transactions, how you can represent from a broker side, also what's important to the ownership. So that's really important, and I'm sure, you know, shaped the way that you even work with your clients today. Are there any mentors additionally, or any specific stories that you'd like to tell to our audience of anything that you remember that really had an impact and changed the trajectory of the way that you work today?
Yeah, some of the stories I have to probably get them a little bit.
Leave some things out, leave some context clues for the audience.
A little more PG related, I guess. But now, I joke aside, I mean, I was very blessed to have them. And Mark Ward was the gentleman that my girlfriend's dad at the time, but he was and always has been a very great mentor of mine as well. He was a business owner in Houston. Actually, when I came aboard, he ended up coming over and doing real estate, but he didn't really broker. He just developer and an owner and let me partner in the deals. But they took the time to really, you know, they didn't need to do that. They had plenty of other things to do, but him and Don and several other people, John Abel and Steve Resling and a number of different people, paths and stuff that took me under their wing. Steve Cooper, Steve Atkinson, a lot of these people that are today very successful in the business in various sectors of the business. You know, they took their time to kind of give me, they didn't have to do that, but they'd set aside time and they would go, okay, let's explain a building to you. And we'll teach you some, tell you what to do. So a lot of times some of the best lessons I think are what not to do. Don't go mm-hmm. do that. I do wish I would have gotten a little more of that probably with some of the mistakes I made. And I try to do that with the younger people I deal with today, but it was, there's been plenty of mentors since then. I mean, Jeff Rinkov at Lee & Associates, like our CEO, has become a mentor of mine, John Sharp. It goes on and on and on. There's so many people, it'd be hard to name them all in this. I could probably talk for the next 2.5 hours on just those people. And I've been real blessed and real lucky in that sense that I've had those people that were willing to do that. It's funny because that's a lot about how Houston is. The only thing I would, what you just said, when you talk about who you know, what's interesting about Houston, I think unique is, it's not necessarily about who. That helps. Knowing somebody, going to Harvard or whatever, going to a great school. But you don't need all that to be successful in Houston. What you need, if you can roll up your sleeves, by the way, this is not a pretty city. It's not a, I like to think it's pretty. It's somewhat prettier, but it's not compared to a lot of cities.
I cover Houston now in sales. I think it's a pretty city.
But it's hot. Like, it's 110 degrees
of humidity out there.
Right. The weather's not great. The traffic's terrible. But you know what? What makes this city amazing, and I'm in love with, I'm a Houstonian now. I told you where I grew up. Mm-hmm. I've been here for 24 years now, and I love this city, and it's the people. And you see them come out of the woodworks when people need it. And then oftentimes you could be sitting at a bar or a restaurant or whatever, chatting it up with somebody, and they'll get up and leave, and they'll impart some wisdom on you, right? And then they'll get up and leave.
Yeah.
And, three people will be like, did you know who that was? No, who was it? And it's some billionaire you were talking to, and they're just a cool, down-to-earth, willing to share a little bit about what got them where they're at, and what they don't rub it in your face, who they are, what anything else.
Yep.
That's what I love about this city. There's a lot of that, and people will, if you're willing to work, and they can see it, they can see that. They can see the people that don't want to work, and they can see the people that do. And even my competitors. I mean, there's people like John Ferruzzo and Tyndall Yap, and I can go on and on just with those people. David Butler in the industry that at times would mentor me. Even, they knew when I was a rookie. They can, you can tell a rookie sometimes, and you're like, hey, how long have you been over there? And because just the way they're talking or what they're saying, and they'd say, hey, maybe talk about this. You're like, okay, yeah, thank you. They kind of mm-hmm. do that without embarrassing you and using it.
Sure.
In fact, they help you. And I think that says a lot about the city. And I think we are unique in that respect. So again, I've been a product of a lot of luck and been real blessed to get where I'm at. So outside of just working really hard, I don't know if there was anything else that I liked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've covered a lot of different cities in my day. And prior to Houston, I covered New York City, which obviously is definitely, you're in the belly of the beast and everyone is kind of out to get one another almost. But very real. But what I've seen is exactly what you said about the people from Houston. But maybe tell our listeners, maybe who aren't from Houston or are in the industry, how do they put themselves out there? What are some skills or techniques or advice that you would give them to just say, hey, go talk to someone? I mean, you and I are both in sales. I'll go up to anyone sitting at a bar. I'll probably talk to a brick wall for 20 minutes, and entertain myself. Sure. But some people don't have that, chutzpah, so to speak, or they don't have that confidence. So how would you kind of instill that, or maybe some words of wisdom to say, hey, just go up and talk to people, and this is how to get started.
I mean, that kind of it, man. And I think you're going to gain confidence the more prepared you are. And that means you have to put the time in. You have to hustle. You have to figure out and really know your stuff. Because otherwise, yeah, you can go up and talk to somebody. It ain't going to matter if you can't speak to the subject. In fact, I actually encourage younger people, especially if they're prospecting, or, you know, I said, you know, stick with the phone. I mean, do both. Go do the door knocking, but also do the phones. And reasonably, number one, on the phones, you can cover 5 times as much territory in the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. Right? Get that many more calls versus knocking on doors in an hour, right? Two, you know, especially if you're really young and you just got out of college or whatever and you look young, you know, you're walking. It's like going to bat at a baseball game with an 0-1 count. The minute you walk in the door, it's like strike. Well, I didn't do anything. I didn't take a pitch. Well, that's tough because you can't possibly know anything about real estate. Look, you just get out of high school, right? They think that, you know, versus when you get your computer and you get your Crexie pulled up, or you get your info pulled up on a particular building or properties, or whatever, you can be the smartest person in the world. Nobody knows that. The one on the other line doesn't know that. And then you go meet with them, right? But you've already established credibility. You're not going to have that strike. Because strike two, by the way, comes when they ask you a question that you don't know right off the top of your head know the answer to. And you just got strike two. You get that deer in the headlights look versus having it in front of you. Now, on the cases where you can't, where you have to walk up to somebody and talk to them, that's where it pays to really pay attention, man. Study up. You know your market. And on top of that, don't be afraid to say, I don't know, you know, but I'm going to find out for you. If they ask you a question, they need to know the answer to it, and you don't know the answer, the worst thing you could do is just start talking, right? Then you just sound like an idiot, especially if they know the answer, they know a little bit, and you're way off, or if they find out later, it's not. And by the way, there's a little caveat to that too, is that if you think you know the answer and you give it to them, and you find out after the fact that that wasn't the right answer, you need to call them and correct it. And they'll respect you more for it. And so that's where you're going to gain credibility that, hey, this person, they're not just going to come out and BS me. They're going to actually, if they got it wrong, they're going to come back and tell. But main thing, prepare. I mean, do your reading. You know, there are jobs out there and there are careers, right? Mm-hmm. I can promise you there are easier jobs than commercial real estate. Way easier. Go get one, you know, if that's what you're looking for. But if you want this to be a career, you gotta treat it like a career. You gotta study. You gotta take the training. You gotta learn how to be the best, or learn how to really, you know, study up on how to use the different programs and softwares and things that are available that weren't available to me when I started. And also get your SIOR, get your CCIM. That's great training, great networking. That's how someone that treats this as a career is going to go do that. They're not, you know, people that are treating it like a job are going to sit around waiting on the phone to ring. And I'm going to tell you, there's times that it rings like crazy and you can make a great living just sitting tight. But when the times get a little bit tougher, the phone's not ringing anymore and you're not going to have that. And so it's what you do, especially at the early parts of your career, that really sets you up for later on. You know, the prospecting or the cold calls or the networking you do today are deals that you're going to make 3, 4, 5, even 7 years from now.
Yep.
And you have to look at it. You have to approach it like that. Like, I'm not expecting this to just fall on my lap tomorrow. I'm going in. I'm here to get information. I'm here to learn something. And as you get that, you collect it and pay attention and document it or store it up, and don't just throw that away. Pay attention to it, study up, do what you have to do there. But over time, you're going to build a large enough book up there, and you're going to have good enough information. You know, an example, you call somebody today and they tell you, well, I've got 4 years left on my lease. You're not a lot you're going to do for them, right? Now, you want to stay in touch with them, but, you know, who knows, in 3 years, they may need more space or whatever. But the reality is you probably don't have a lot you can do with them. But I guarantee you, if you call that person in 3 years or 3.5 years, you're going to have a different phone call. Because now you know that, and this would be another piece of advice, pay attention to tenants. The buyers, you'll get the buyers. You'll get the listings and all that. That'll come. But if you focus most of your attention on tenants, that's the highest probability of success. And the reason being is because all leases have one thing in common. They expire. So someone's got a decision to make. You talk to a person that owns a building, right? They may need to move, but they don't have to. You know, right. They may be all busting at the seams and you're looking at it and they know it. And they know they need to move, but they're too busy and they don't want to mess with it right now. They don't have to do anything. You got a person whose lease expires at the end of the month. They have to do something. They have to decide, am I going to renew? Am I going to move? Am I going to buy? What am I going to do? So you increase your odds of success when you target those that you know are going to have to make a decision, right? And then pay attention to them. Take good notes. Build your database up. And over time, like I said, you're going to have phone calls that you're making or meetings you're going to have that are going to be a heck of a lot more fruitful because there's a decision that has to get made and you're there to help them make it, help them, you know, guide them through it. So
Absolutely. And Mike, you just gave us a ton of good advice. I mean, know your market, read up on your market. If you don't know, just go in with that confidence, know who that person is, know who you're talking to. And more importantly, make sure that they know you, right? Make sure that you're following up with them. You're taking diligent notes. You remember that they had, you know, their daughter's birthday party and she wanted a pony or whatever it is, you know, those little things that set yourself apart from a personal perspective. And then obviously from a market perspective, you know, you definitely need to know all of that. Now, you gave us a lot of things that you do on the day-to-day, I'm sure. A little bit before this, you said something about some mistakes, right? And that's personally, not to get too personal on myself, but I learned so much more from my own mistakes or seeing other people's mistakes. So in your career, did you have any favorite mistakes that you've either witnessed or made yourself that you want to share with us? And then that kind of led you to course correct or, you know, pave a new path because of that downfall, whether it was a deal or just something with a client?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let me, before I answer that, actually, I did leave at one point too, you know, is the need, at, especially at the younger age, realize something, you've got time, right? Use it wisely. And you know, look at this as a, it doesn't have to be a marathon if you sprint hard enough. Okay. And in other words, think of it like, and I'm making it up, but if, you know, if you have a milestone of the time when you get to your 25th hundred hour or your 3000th hour in this business, you're going to be a different broker than you were at hour number one. And no matter how you get there, whether it takes you 3 years to get there, or takes you 3 months to get there. I don't know how you're gonna do 3 months, but that's without, you know, sleep. But you know, you get the point, I hope. You need to try to work those hours and think about anybody that's like a brand new lawyer, right? You talk to any of your friends that get into the law business, they don't see the light of day. They come to work, it's dark, they got a room inside, they don't have a window, they leave, it's dark, you know, and they're working on Saturdays. They're expected to put in the hours for their company and to bill those hours. New doctors that are on their residency, same kind of thing. Accountants, all the above. We're no different. You got to put in the hours. And, you know, I like to say this. I mean, I'm not going to say I was, you know, specifically talented in any specific area. You know, I've never been the strongest or the biggest or definitely not the tallest. And you know, I like to think I'm pretty good looking and pretty smart, but that's probably neither one of those things either, right? But one thing's for certain is you're not going to outwork me. I will not let you outwork me. I'll put in the hours. If I'm not capable of, if I don't have the information you have, or I don't have the talent in whatever area it is, I'm going to outwork you. And I'll catch up to you that way. And anybody can take that approach, but you have to take it. You have to own it. You have to go and do it. And you have to persevere, because there's going to be times that things aren't going to go well, which brings me to the mistake conversation, which is, you know, I made a ton of them. I mean, everything from very simple ones when I was brand new to, you know, literally I was cold calling a building and I cold call leasing offices. I had no clue that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing, right? And you call the leasing office, they're like, are you calling a building? You're like, yeah, I sure am. And they're like, can you stop? You know, they take me to free lunch. You know, it was cool, but it was like, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that, right? You're not gonna make any friends doing that. But luckily, they got that I was new, and they were like, you call that building across the street, don't call ours. Bring them to us. You know, but they take you to lunch to do that. But you know, I've made plenty of that. You know, other cases would be, there's times that you can let a deal get to you. You can let it weigh on you. You can let a failure, and whether it be losing a deal or client, or if it's just you work real hard on something, because that's going to happen a lot. And I think it's going to happen to any business, but it does happen a lot here. But you put a lot of time and effort into something and it doesn't work out for whatever reason. Oftentimes it's not having anything to do with you. It's, and you can't take it personally. It's nothing to do with you. You didn't, you know, contaminate that property, or you didn't cause the banks to stop financing. You didn't cause any of that, but you're going to be you're a casualty of it. And so you have to kind of take this as a role, right? Like, hey, I've got a role I'm going to. If somebody's curt with you, you don't know what happened in their life, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, and they may jump on you or whatever else. It's not personal. They don't know you. And so don't take it personal. Just move on. And when things don't work out for you, you know, I've got a policy, you know, especially if it's a big enough deal or bigger, you know, I put enough work into it. Yeah, I'll let myself kind of cry in the beer, so to speak, you know, for one evening. Right? I'm going to go home. I may be upset, and I maybe even allow myself to, I try not to do that. I try not to bring it home to my family, because my wife will let me know about it. But I got kids. It's not their fault, you know, but, you know, I try to, you know, but I'll allow myself to be upset about it. But the next morning, come 6:30, 7 o'clock, when I get to office, I'm back at work. And it's time to go back to work. And you got to let whatever happened yesterday, it's gone. Move on. Go get the next one. And you take that approach. And I think probably a big mistake is letting things, you know, weigh on you more than they should. I think another one would be really learning at some point that you can't do everything. You can't work every single thing. And you only have, when I talk about time, yeah, you can spend a lot of it and you should, especially early on. But, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day. And so at some point you have to learn, hey, you know what? I need to ask for some help. I need to bring a partner in. Maybe I don't need to make the 100% of the commission on this deal. I can make 50% of it and bring in a partner who's going to help me with it. And, you know, I think there's a number of times where I call the little yellow sticky that sits on your desk. You got a name and a phone number on it. You need to call this person. Maybe you drove by their building and saw they were crowded, or somebody gave you their name and they said, hey, I think they're going to move, or whatever reason, you know, your networking groups, all that stuff. And I'd sit there and look at it, and I'm like, I get so busy, and I'd look at those yellow stickies, and I had three or four of them on my desk, and you inevitably, you know, a month later, 2 months later, the yellow sticky's still there. I hadn't called them, and all of a sudden, you're driving down the highway, and you see their new sign on their new building going up, and you're like, if I'd have called that person, that could have been my deal, right? And those kind of mistakes. So, you know, a new rule is if I stare at that yellow sticky more than 24 hours, I'm going to hand it to somebody and say, call this person and tell me if there's a deal, but you're in on the deal now, and have them help you.
Sure.
And don't be afraid. You don't have to be greedy. You know, let them involve them in those deals and get them more, you know, be willing to let others get involved and share the wealth a little bit. And guess what? It comes back around too. You know, it's better to work on 40 deals than it is to work on 10 all by yourself. So.
Yep. I love that. I took so many things away from everything that you just said. First and foremost, though, is commercial real estate is a career. It's not a job. But I tell my sales team all the time, you want a job, I'll make the referral. I'll help you out. I'll be your biggest. I'll get you the other job. But this is not a job. It's a career. And especially in commercial real estate, you are representing your own brand, right? You're representing the company that you're working for, but people want to work with you. So absolutely do everything that you possibly can to set yourself apart. But second, I mean, don't be hard on yourself, right? Things go wrong all the time. And sometimes it's you, sometimes you made that mistake, but sometimes it's completely out of your control. So roll it off, you know, be upset about it for 20 minutes, but then go home and love your family. Right? It's not their fault, right? Pick it up, go through it the next day, because 90% of sales, I say this all the time, is in between your ears, right? And you can manage that head, you can manage everything. You just keep going, you put that time and effort in every single day, and you're going to get there. And third, I think that so many people, especially salespeople, were very egotistical. So it's very hard to ask for help. And I think that the number one thing is recognizing and realizing when you can ask for help, because just as you said, you can do 40 deals with other people, or you can do 10 on your own. You're going to make more money when you're doing those 40, and you're going to learn more, right? Because then you have other ideas that you can, you know, bounce off of and things like that. So that all of those things just really resonated with me, and thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. I definitely think it's important to develop good habits early too.
Developing good habits early. What are some that you do, you know, every single day that are pivotal to your career that are, you know,
I can tell you something. This it took me. I had to learn this later. It was harder when you don't learn it early. Okay, is it get up and plan your day. Don't just start off just going. That doesn't work. You're in react mode all day. You're looking for the fire, and you're gonna let things are gonna slip through the cracks when you do that, or you're gonna spend too much time on something that really, you know. Again, I try to make sure all clients are treated, you know, do the best I can do on any deal, but any situation you gotta look at it and say, man, why am I spending all this time on this particular deal making X versus there's five times the amount being made over here and I'm neglecting it, you know? And so when I say plan, I mean, you need to plan your month, plan your week, plan your year. I mean, set your goals and stick to them and have these check-ins where you look at it. Where am I in relation to this goal? And what is my next step? Well, how do I move the boulder one more inch today? What needs to happen to move it? You look at your deals that way, but you know, in the morning, you know, you get here, you know, I actually set a timer on my phone because it's so hard. I'm so ADD. I'm like wanting to check my emails or start calling somebody, or I'm thinking about this, reading this document over here or whatever. And I realized, you know what I said, and I always do a weird odd time. Just, I don't know why, it just mentally helps, you know, to not have it an even number, you know, and it's like I'll set it for 23 minutes or 25 minutes. Right. And I do not stop planning my day until that buzzer goes off. It's only 25 minutes, or even if it's 20, right. I'm real slam that day. I made 20, but no matter what, you don't deviate. Stay on the paper, write down what you have to do, figure out what you can delegate off that plan. Why are you waiting to delegate it till 1 o'clock? delegate everything at 8 o'clock. That way it's all getting worked on while you're working on other things. Look at something and go, is that really an action or is that more of a multi-step process here? Because if it's a multi-step, list out the steps. You know, are there any that you can do simultaneously? Are there any that you have, or one to the next? Write all of that down. Are there any things that are, you know, categorize it out. Look, okay, these are phone calls. These are emails. And one of my emails, I don't mean checking emails. I'm talking about I have a specific email to send. You know, I've got to send Ashley a survey, right? And email it to her. Okay, I know that's one specific thing I do. Write that down. Things that I can only do at my office. Meaning if I'm in a meeting, there's no point in thinking about this, right? I can't do it until I get to the office, right? And I want to make sure if I'm going to be out of meetings the afternoon, I get it all done in the morning. I meet in the morning. Documents need to review. Errands. I mean, I say errands. That could be meetings. That could be building tours. It could be anything, right? Have you ever gone out to the store? You know, you go to Home Depot to get something and you get back home with whatever you bought. And you're like, all right, got that done. What's next? And you're like, oh, I need to go to Bed Bath & Beyond. What the hell? It was right next door to Home Depot. I could have done that while I was out, right? So you have that kind of listed out and you see it. So you know, hey, when I'm out here, I need to go ahead and hit this. You know, get your schedule listed out and start looking at it and saying, okay, where am I going to get these calls done? You know what? I've got so much other stuff to do. I got to do some searches. I got to get on Correxy and do some property searches in the morning. Well, I need to be at my computer to do that, right? Well, you know what? Maybe, you know, it turns out I've got all these meetings in the afternoon. I've got an hour trip out to this building. You know what? I can make phone calls then. And so push the phone calls to them. Don't think you have to jump on them right away. Try to plan it out and you kind of you batch your tasks, put like tasks together and then block time to do those tasks. When am I going to do this? And is it feasible to think I can even do it today? Based on what my schedule looks like. So you do all those kind of things. When you plan like that, you're going to get five times as much done. And who was it? Was it Benjamin Franklin said, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Yep. You know? And it's true. If you don't go out and plan it, you're going to you can take the same exact list of things, right? And if you just go in and you don't do any of the planning, let's say your list is sitting over here, you didn't make it. It's just in your mind, it's a list. You're going to get two or three things done on that list today versus, oh, I'll get 19 things done because I planned it out. I figured out when I was going to do them. Because by the time I got to go into those meetings, I realized I didn't do the Correxy search I needed to do. And it's not getting done today because I'm in the car now. I can't do it from the car, right? So think like that. When you do things like that, you're going to be more efficient. Other things, you know, I talk about time management. Probably the two most important things for anybody to learn in this business, and I think any business really, is time management and organization. We're not wired to be organized. We're brokers. We're all ADD like that. We're hunters. There's so much crap flying at us on a daily basis that, man, it's real easy to get unorganized. And it's easy also when you're early on to not really think how, not understand the importance of it because, yeah, you could, you know, for example, when you close out a deal, I get a sales deal done. You know, it's easy as a young broker, you just throw it in a drawer and you're done with it because you're busy doing other stuff. But I'm going to tell you, what I found is there's probably, and I don't know the statistic to be an exact number here, but I probably should look this up because I can probably do it. But, you know, I think there's probably a 65 to 70% chance if I represent a buyer today on a building, that I'm going to be listing that building in 5 to 7 years, at least. So if I've got all this due diligence materials that we got when we bought it, I need to organize that, get it out of my office, right? Organize it, put it somewhere, whether it be probably electronically, but organize it, name it where I can find it in 5 years when the client calls and says, I want you to list my building. Instead of having to track all that crap down and go through file boxes or call the owner and have them to give it to you when he probably lost it too. Organize that stuff. You're going to save tons of time. You get a building listing, right? You know, I got this building that's in Conroe that, you know, it takes an hour and 20 some odd minutes to get there. Well, if you think about it, it takes me an hour and 20 minutes. Let's call it an hour for easy math. Hour to get out there. I'm going to take 30 minutes touring it because I got to open the building up and get the client in there to tour it. And then so I spend 30 minutes there and then I spend an hour back. That's 2.5 hours, right? Well, if I realize I've got a tour on Thursday and I've, they call me on Monday to tour it, right? They say, oh, well, we want to tour it on Thursday at 2 o'clock. Well, shouldn't I go down? We'll talk about it in a little while, but you know, there's that leads list on Correxy. I'll go down that list of anybody that looked at that same building and go, hey, I'm going to be out there at 2 o'clock on Thursday. Do you want to tour it at 1:45? You want to tour at 1:30? You want to tour at 2:15? And you'd be surprised how many times I set up 2-3 tours. Now let's do that math. Then we can move on here. But if you do the math, I take an hour out there, same hour, right? Usually if you have multiple tours, if you have three, right? Those are only 15-minute tours because really the first 15 minutes is going to be spent kind of opening the building up, get unlocked, all that. So I'm going to go out there. So 15, that's 45 minutes, and then an hour back. I spent 2 hours and 45 minutes. But if I did all three of those tours independently, that's 7.5 hours. So I spent 2 hours and 45 minutes versus 7.5 hours all because, well, I did what I should be doing, which is following up with people, utilizing my resources. I was more time efficient and manage my time better by going, I'm going to be out there anyway. Can I save this hour trip? Mm-hmm. Not have to make it three separate times, or I guess it's an hour. So that's six different times, you know. That's yep. key. You learn to do that, you will be a successful broker. You don't even have to be that smart. You can actually, you can get luckier, you know, and then organize your stuff so you have the data and you have the information. You don't have to go look for it later. Save time.
And that's the key, and it's saving time. And what I always hear, I mean, obviously self-care is a huge topic, you know, every day. And for me personally, I don't necessarily think self-care is like getting a massage and a facial, which obviously I love to do, but self-care is me setting myself up for something that my future self is going to be happy for. So right. if that means setting up my day tonight for the next day, so I come into work and I know exactly what I need to do. For you, it's 20, 25 minutes in the morning. For me, it's the night before. And it's saying, okay, when I wake up, I don't have to even think about that. Or maybe it's setting my clothes out for the night before. Because again, true. ADD, I'm like, what do I wear? You know, all of this stuff.
I'll stare at it for an hour in the morning when I can.
Exactly. How do you help your future self save time and get prepared to bring your best self to that meeting, to that next day, whatever it is? So absolutely, that applies in every facet of your life.
Right.
So moving on to the second topic and diving into what we're going to talk about today, I'd love to talk about the current state of commercial real estate, both nationwide as well as in your home market of Houston. So will you give our listeners a 30,000-foot overview of the commercial real estate sector today? So what trends are most worthy of attention and what, in your opinion, is just fluff?
You know, I think anytime you get a lot of news involved, I mean, there's going to be a little bit of fluff, or a lot in some cases, you know, but, you know, I don't think it's any secret that the market has cooled off a bit. But I think it's really more, it pertains a lot more to whatever asset class you're talking about. I think offices, it's tougher, especially post COVID. Some people aren't coming back, or they're not renewing, they're thinking about that 20,000 foot renewal. And they're saying, man, do we need 20,000 feet? Are we good with 7? You know, so there's some issues there. But primarily, you're going to see the banking industry, and I don't think the banking industry is in bad a shape. And I'm going to throw out a disclaimer, by the way. I'm not a finance expert or anything of that sort. But you know, I don't think the banking industry, on that based on my layman's opinion, I guess, is not as in bad a shape as he probably would hear or see in the news and whatnot. I think it's one because you have a lot more sophisticated groups now. And we went through what we went through in the financial crisis and learned a lot. And you know, I think a lot of mistakes were made there that weren't made here. I think that you're also going to see more willingness and creativity in working things out with these loans. That's not to say there's not going to be some pain. And I think it's going to be worse in some markets than in any of the others. You know, retail surprisingly seems to, in at least in my opinion, seems to have come back a lot stronger than I would have expected. You know, maybe less on the big box stuff and more so in just your neighborhood stuff, people want to go get a haircut. They don't, you know, they got to go somewhere to get a haircut. They got to go get their nails done. They want to go to the movies. They want to do things. They got to go to the gym. They don't want to work at home. So a lot of that, I think, has really come back fairly strong. And I think we're seeing a lot of activity there. But, you know, my specialty is going to be more on the industrial side. And I'd say that the big industrial distribution deals, maybe I wouldn't say it's really been that noticeable. I mean, it was so hot. And that's another thing, too. It was so hot and so active that, you know, here we are going, oh my gosh, it's slowed down a little bit, but it's still, if you look at it statistically, still pretty strong compared to any other time, right? So it's not that bad. And matter of fact, I think, you know, zeroing into Houston a bit, I think we're really poised for some very good years ahead of us. We're going to go through some of the same that everybody goes through in certain areas, but I think that, you know, distribution, we have a population that's still one of the fastest growing in the nation. I think, you know, there's so many things about Texas in general that really play in well for businesses wanting to move here. And, you know, you have your Texas Triangle, you have Austin that essentially they operationally, even how it works. You got Austin that operationalizes the ideas of Silicon Valley. You've got Dallas that leverages its banking system to, you know, make those ideas a reality, right? And then you got San Antonio that's, you know, really good at anything you can put on an assembly line. You know, they've got a below Texas average cost of labor. But I honestly, and you know, I'm biased. Yes, I live here, but I think the rock star of the bunch is going to be Houston because we play with Austin in tech. We can play with Dallas in the financial sector. We've got manufacturers. I'll talk about in a sec, but we've got a great labor pool. We're a port city, and we have the biggest port by value or by tonnage. Sorry, most valuable port by tonnage in the northern hemisphere. We've got you know, we've got a great medical center. We've got so many other things that really play well for us. And on top of that, I mean, I didn't know this till actually just the other day. So I thought it was a cool stat, but I didn't realize, but Houston ranks second globally to Germany in high-end manufacturing. So, you know, I'm talking about the nuts and bolts, but the real cool stuff, the machinery, right? The sophisticated stuff. And so that says a lot, not to mention with what's going on with Mexico right now, where you have labor costs at a very fraction of the cost of Chinese labor, yet it's twice the skill level. So especially when you consider shipping and everything, there's a lot more getting done now in Mexico than, and I think the trend is going to be to Mexico, more so in the years ahead of us than and less from China. So that all bodes real well for Texas and particularly for Houston. So, you know, we're excited about that part. We're growing, you know, and so I think we're going to see manufacturing kind of pick up some of the slack that may get let out, some of it. I don't think it's a lot, but it gets let out by the distribution market, which it slows down as the economy kind of does what it does. So a lot of positive things there. But overall, I think, you know, yes, we're going to have to deal with some pain, but this isn't new to anybody. I mean, the market, it's always cyclical. Matter of fact, we've been in one of the longest cycles of growth in the history, in our history. Actually, I think it is the longest. We've known for a few years now, we've been in the late innings and we've been in extra innings. This is not a major surprise to anybody. I don't think we're going to see any, you know, wide scale systemic collapse or any of that kind of thing, but there's going to be a pain and it's going to have to get corrected and it will correct. And, you know, again, being where we're at and located where we're at, we're actually, you know, just like with the last recession, I mean, we were actually positive in our growth. Everybody else was big negatives and we were crying about slightly positive, but you know, we were very insulated now because oil was what it was and we are the energy capital of the world. So that benefit mm-hmm. us a bit, but I think it goes for everybody at this point. I think probably office is going to be the hardest hit and will continue to be that. But for the most part, you know, and we'll talk about it. I think it's also some of the other questions. I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute, but you know, it really comes down to, you know, fundamentals, you know, and how you, when you go about buying a building and approaching it. So.
Absolutely. And you kind of mentioned it almost leading into it. So learning from the financial crisis, you know, what other ways is this different and is this typical of market cycles? So, you know, you kind of mentioned or we're starting to increasing rates and inflation and things like that. So what's different now and kind of what's the same?
Well, obviously I think the interest rate situation is that's, you know, let the cat out of the bag, right? That has changed things. But again, I would go to the fact that if you look at, I think it's the last 40 or 50, maybe it's a 40-year average or 50-year of interest rates, we've been at like 7, it's like 7%. I mean, 6.5%, 7%. We're not that high over the average for the last 40 or 50 years. We just got so used to and spoiled at this really low interest situation. And I think it opened the door for people to make some mistakes and probably overextend themselves on some properties where you probably shouldn't have been that, you know, crazy with it, because when you have that loan that you have to renew and interest rates have gone up a significant amount, that's going to change the ball game here. So you better watch it, you know. And I think a lot of people were smart enough to see it coming and started divesting a bit and started getting, you know, paying their loans down, things like that, so that when it came time to refinance, they're not underwater here. But I think probably more than that than what people would probably realize. I think when you watch the news, you say, "Oh my gosh, it's about to all go." But go to nothing or whatever. But how it's different, I mean, I think that again we learned our lessons or learned a lot of lessons the first time around, you know, a few years ago. It's been a while now, 15 years ago. Wow, it's been a while. That happened, it didn't seem like yesterday. On top of that, I think that this time around we have other factors that are going to really push us out of it, and I think this, we're looking at a probably fairly mild downturn, if it even occurs. I mean, there's still a chance we don't have to do that. But so I think we're, you know, it's not as, I don't know, you see enough of them and you accept the fact that it is cyclical and it always will be. And I promise you, if it's up, it's going to come down at some point. If it's down, it's going to go back up. We just ride it, you know. And if anything, this is about the start of when people really make money in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
When actually the market's down, not when it's good, you know. So.
I don't have a crystal ball, Mike, but I knew you were going to say that.
If we did, maybe I'd be on my yacht right now.
Yeah. I mean, all the people that I interview that have been in commercial real estate, they always say the same thing. It's cyclical. It's up and down. You just got to stick through it. And I think a lot of people that maybe are a little bit newer just get a little bit spooked at times like this. But it's really in a down market where people start to make money. And if you have the gumption to continue to ride it out, they're going to be in the exact same position that you were just talking about. So thanks for sharing that. Do you have any surprising or controversial thoughts about the current market and happenings that you would like to share with us?
Gotta be careful what I say there, don't I? okay, so clients are listening, but now controversial thoughts. I don't know if I'd say they're really controversial, but I think that, you know, there's definitely, you know, there were people that made had poor decision making when they went into this thing. I think that unfortunately, if people want to keep betting or hoping that construction costs are going to come down, and you know, I was just at a panel the other day, and you know, people from some really large construction companies that definitely know their stuff, they're not expecting it to see it drop much more than, you know, 5% at best. And you know, there's a chance if you're expecting 15, 20, 30% drops, it's not coming. You have to get over that and accept the new reality. This is what things cost now. They've been low for a long time. Do we think interest rates are going to go back to, you know, zero? No, they're not. Get used to it. You're going to have to pay some interest. That's kind of how a loan usually works, right? so, you know, it's the new reality. And I think probably the ones that are going to really probably be the most defiant are the ones that are going to like it the least. They're going to be your tenants because rents have gone up a lot. And I think they have more to go. There's more room. I mean, there's more to travel there. And so, you know, if I'm a tenant and I'm looking to do a lease, even right now, you know, if you're thinking, hey, I'm going to find a way to ride this out for a year or two, and you know, in 2 years, the rents were going to be lower than the rent. I don't think that's happening. I don't think you're going to see rents drop. You're going to see rents keep going up. And it's more a matter of cost than anything, right? Like things cost, you know, 40, 50% more today versus yesterday. There's no way I can rent to you less. I have to get this number. Otherwise, I can't do the deal, you know, or I can't pay for
sure.
It. So that's ultimately where it's going. And that pulls mm-hmm. everything. The new construction is going to pull everybody's rents up to some level. And, you know, if I'm a tenant, I mean, you really got to consider maybe can I get a longer term? And conversely, if I'm a landlord, maybe I will consider a little bit shorter term than what I maybe originally wanted to go for, because if I can't get the rent I want today, you probably will be able to get it tomorrow. You know? So,
sure.
You know, I'm not suggesting you go out and try to do 6 months or kick at the can 1 year, but, you know, some considerations there.
Definitely something to think about. Now, switching, and I know we were talking about, you know, Houston, Dallas, Austin, you know, that those kind of metros. Talk to us specifically about Texas and Houston. What fundamentals make this state overall, as well as the metro, unique? And what are your long-term thoughts on the region?
Cheap food, cheap labor. Compared to most other places, cheap land. I mean, you talk to people here, we're all arguing and complaining about the land being higher than we want it to be, but it's still cheap compared to elsewhere. You know, we've got a, you know, like I said, great labor pool, and it's lower than the average, well lower than the average. We've got inputs coming everywhere. We can self-sustain there. We've got great port. We've got hilariously looser or I'll say, what's the word? I don't want to say loose. Business-friendly regulations, and that's not going to change, you know. And the reason that's not going to change is, look, the Texas legislature meets once every 2 years, right? That's what I love about this state. The Texas legislature meets once every 2 years for 30 days, and they're constitutionally prohibited from even talking about legislation for the first 15 of that 30 days. So they got 2 weeks to work it all out. So they're going to compromise, and you're not going to see them be as stringent and hold ground as much, because if you go back to your constituents as a politician, you haven't done anything, or you can't show you did anything, you're not keeping your job. So they're going to find a way to get those bills passed, and they're going to basically have to compromise, which keeps regulations looser and more business, I say loose, more friendly and business friendly. And so therefore, that's why people want to move here. We've got no state income tax. There's any number of reasons, and we've got the room to expand. And, you know, there's tons of reasons why I think fundamentally speaking, Texas is a great, you know, the prospects for Texas are great. And I think you're going to continue to get better. You know, tons of business. Like I said, they're moving out. You know, we have a little bit, we're better with the, from a, or I say better, but you don't see as much of the some of the issues you see in some of the big cities. We have our share of issues. I'm not going to say they don't exist, and I'm not going to, I'm not saying this is like, perfect, but compared to some of the other cities, I won't name them right now, but they're having problems, and people are shutting down and moving out because of safety concerns. Well, they don't have them as much here. They're coming here because of all the other reasons I just named on top of the safety concerns. This is where you can conduct business. And so the prospects for Texas and Houston in particular, being the rock star of that bunch, like I said, I think it looks great. Stuff that's going to happen on the border, with Laredo and McAllen and other cities like that. You're going to see distribution jump up there. Why? Because all that stuff coming out of Mexico has got to go somewhere to get sorted and sent out to where it's going. And so it just makes sense, logically speaking, in so many different ways. So
move over, Mike. I'm coming to Houston.
We got room.
Awesome. We'll appreciate that insight. And kind of switching to our third topic here. So with all this market knowledge in mind, we'd really love to tap into some of your career experience regarding what younger brokers or investors can take away from this conversation. So you have a unique perspective as both broker and investor. What advice would you share with your fellow principals or potential clients seeking to navigate the market today?
Good or bad market, if you get a fundamentally sound property, it's going to do well. It's going to have it better times than others, like anything. But I think that if you go in and you focus on fundamentals, what's the value of this property? What's it cost? What's the land? What's the best use of it? Are these rents realistic? And you don't press it. You don't try to, invent rents. And I know that there's a tendency to want to do that when you're trying to make returns work and you're going, well, I think, can we expect the rents to go up this far? Sure, I think you can expect rents to go up, but, be realistic. And when you do that, and you have, you go with the fundamentals, the things that make a deal work, location, access, generic side of the things. There's so many things you can go off on that whole subject alone, but is this building, does it give itself the ability to lease or to target the largest possible audience, right? Or the largest amount pool of prospects, right? An example, say I have a building that's, and I'm thinking more if I'm a user and I want to move into that building, one day I have to consider I'm going to have to get out of this, right? If I'm okay with a 18-foot clear height building because my company, I only stack things 16-foot tall, something like that. Maybe pay a little bit extra. It's not much more to get the 24 or 28-foot clear height building. Why? Because when I'm ready to sell or lease this thing, if somebody needs 18 feet, they can take 28. Sure. But if they need 24 feet, they can't take my 18-foot building.
They can't read it.
Mm-hmm. So focus on things like that. Am I landlocked? At some point you have to realize, hey, don't cover more of your property up solely because you need an extra 5,000 foot of space. Go lease a building or go buy another piece of property and do it there. Because at some point you're gonna devalue your property, right? Or you're not gonna get the return on what you're spending on it. Especially if you're in an area like downtown or in the Heights area where they're knocking down buildings that are actually kind of done with it. Where they're gonna knock down the building and build townhomes on top of it. They don't care what you just spent to improve your building. They see no value. And if anything, it's cost them more to demo, right? Pay attention to those kind of things. As an investor, same kind of thing. You want to pay attention. Am I allowing myself the largest possible group or pool of prospects? And sometimes it means, you're going to pay more for an asset that allows that than one that doesn't. You're still better off going there because you're going to be the first one that gets leased. There's nothing worse than an empty building and having to write a check and deal with, waiting around and hoping that you get the right deal or having to wait on the other three buildings that are out there to get leased before you even get looked at, So if you want to be the first one. And so make sure you're set in that kind of position. And it also goes down to, when you're buying it, don't try to make that deal work. It either works or it doesn't. Be realistic with your expectations. Again, you focus on the fundamentals, you're going to be fine no matter what. You'll keep your building leased, maybe a little bit lower rent in a bad market, but you know what? It's going to be leased. It's going to get carried. You'll be good to go, or you can get out of it. Problem with real estate teaches a lot of the younger people. The only disadvantage I say, or one of the big disadvantages, the biggest is going to be it's not liquid. You tie your money up and it's going to sit there until you get out. Sure, you got commercial estate, you can get rents out of it and all that fun stuff. But at the end of the day, if you want to pull your money back out, you have to sell it or refinance it. But mainly, you have to sell it, and mm-hmm. you need to make sure that you're positioned going into it that you can get out of it, whether leasing it or selling it, in a timely manner that makes sense for you. And I think a lot of people look at users and investors, but primarily I'll say users are going to look at a deal. They're going to look at two main things. They're going to look at functionality. I mean, does it work for my company or not? If it doesn't work for my company, there's no point looking at it, right? Does it have the amenities I need? The second thing they're going to look at is financial. And they're going to say, can I afford it? Right? Can I afford to make the payments? Can I afford to occupy this building? And then part B on the financials, is it a good deal? Am I paying the right price for it? Sometimes you have to get over the fact that you're paying market, because by definition, you are the market. You know, so but trying to think you're going to get something below market just because you want that, it's not going to happen. You are the market. Get ready to pay market and be okay with it. But it's market. Mm-hmm. You are paying market. And the third thing, again, I think that most people don't look at, that I think is just as important first too, is going to be your exit strategy. How am I getting out of this thing? Identify that going in. If you can figure it out before you get into the deal, you're that much better off, because one day you will have to get out one way or the other, or you may need to get out or may want to get out. But you want to be able to do it easily and not have to go through any amount of pain or financial loss to do it.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's the here and now, plus it's the future self. What is this going to benefit me in the future, and how can I look at that now? So appreciate all of that. Now, again, talking about some of our younger folks, younger brokers or younger investors, what's changed in the business? So tell us about some of the opportunities that are available today for young commercial real estate professionals that you didn't have before. Or what tools should they be taking advantage of, and why?
Oh my gosh. I mean, what has changed? Everything, except for one thing. I'll tell you one thing that hadn't changed that I think is interesting, and people do overlook this, is the one thing that hadn't changed, and it probably will never change, is going to be the concept of a relationship. How important it is to foster those relationships, to maintain them, to be that trusted advisor. Sometimes that means you're not getting paid for every single thing you do, but making sure that, you know, and by the way, you did a great job on that deal. You know, 7-year lease, you wait 6.5 years to call that client and say hi, they may not be your client anymore. You know, there's plenty of other people been calling them in between then. You need to stay in front of them and be an advisor. Be willing to help them out when needed. You know, they need a roofer. You have contacts. Build your list of contacts and vet them out. Don't just send them somebody. You know, because you have if you have to do that because you don't have somebody, that's fine too. But you need to tell them, hey, I never use this person, so I'm just giving you a name and number that I heard from somebody else. But try to vet those people. Try to get experiences with those people that you're going to send them. Be that kind of advisor, and it pays a long way, because you want to be the first person they're going to pick the phone up and call when they see a deal, or when it's time for them to make a decision, or they need help. You want them to be the one to call, and you need to stay in touch with them in the process. Having said all that, what's changed? Oh my gosh! I mean, well, let's put it this way: when I got in the business, we were using a fax machine, so that was painful. I don't think it's 12, 15 years since I sent a fax. I mean, I'm mostly. The younger people don't even know what a fax machine is. Good for them. They don't want to mess with that. You know, when PDF was around, it was like, oh man, you couldn't send a file because it was too big, right? It would jam an email. So now we got all these cool tech there. But I mean, you got web services that weren't around that are around today. You got everything from your CoStars, your LoopNets. Prexy is one of the best, if not the best, out there, for reasons I can talk about in a minute. But you know, use them. And by the way, don't just use them, especially if you're brand new. Man, take the time now before you get busy, before you get overwhelmed. And especially if your company, like we have a program where we bring you in for the first 6 months as an analyst, and you're doing a lot of work for us. But I also say, look, this is the time. Like now, go take those, you know, call Crexie, they'll come and teach you. They'll go online and show you how to do a certain thing. Don't try to learn it all in one day, because you're not going to, but don't just be good at one thing in it. You know, most of us are good at, you know, 20-30% of any given program. And it's not because we don't want to use more of it, it's we don't even know how to use it. We don't even know what exists there. And we're all so busy running a million different directions that we don't take the time to do it, although we should, because we'd be more effective. But man, take the time, be the best person, you know, especially newer in the business. You know, our job is to bring value to our clients and bring value to a transaction. Your job is to bring value to other brokers, you know, be able to do something they can't do. And when you take the time to learn these technologies, you are more effective. These younger people now, they grew up with technology. And so they've had it their whole lives. And so, my gosh, you are going to be way better at it, or they are going to be way better at it than I am. And, you know, and they don't have to go through the pain of learning it that I have to go through to do it. You know, having said that, I mean, you got these programs, you got these, there was a once upon a time, there were one or two, three firms out there, you know, internationally even, that could go up to a client and say, we can access owners and buyers and information that no one else can touch. That's not true anymore. Everybody can get to it. It may take 5 minutes longer, but you can get to it real easy. It's out there. You know, there's a million different resources to use. Google Earth, for goodness sake, just that alone. We used to have to drive around and look around in space, and you'd get back and realize, oh man, I missed a whole area because I didn't know to look at it, right? Drones, cool stuff like that. But I mean, now you can literally look at Google Earth and something as simple and mainstream as that and go, oh, look, I need to hit this area over here. Or, oh, wow, we knock all these trees down in this land we're looking to buy. That's not going to look good. So maybe we don't want to buy this, right? So just having that. But and it goes all the way to, you know, ChatGPT, which is terrifying to me. That's some of it. But I mean, good grief, you can do, you know, it's amazing. I think about my kids are 14 years old and, you know, I'm telling them, you better not be using this to write your papers. But good grief, are we ever going to see term papers written? You know, like, is it going to be ChatGPT writing them all? But, you know, it's crazy, all the stuff that's out there now, and it continues to advance and continues to get better every day. It is extremely important. Now, technology is fast become a major part of our industry and every industry. You better stay up to date with it, because otherwise you're going to get left behind. And, you know, if you're out there sending a fax right now, you know, somebody else is ChatGPT and, you know, 100 clients or whatever they're going to do. I don't know how to use it.
If you're sending a fax, I'm going to come over to your house and take that fax away from you.
I don't even know how to do it, but I did used to do it.
But that's huge advice. I mean, there's always tools out there. Stay up to date. Use everything that you possibly can. Make your job smarter. You know, work smarter, not harder, and use all the tools that are available to you now as a broker that, you know, maybe weren't available 20 years ago. And again, just be more efficient, set yourself up for success. So appreciate all that advice. Our listeners always, always love to hear these rapid fire questions. So given your expertise, would love some words of advice and rapid quick questions, if you don't mind here. So first, if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be, and why?
Industrial, Houston, Texas, you know, anywhere in Texas, of course.
Of course. Nice and easy. Nice and easy. Second, what is the most common misconception about your job or the commercial industry in general?
Oh, wow. That it's easy, or that we just show up to work and get paid to be here and paid lots, all this money to be here. I think that, you know, if you really divide up and you look at the hours that get put into to being successful and to making any serious amount of money, it's not the hourly rate. Over time, it gets better, right? You learn time management, you learn how to all the resources, and you get better at what you do, but get the experience. But early on, it's like you're barely making minimum wage. I mean, it's not as easy as you think, because there's so many things that didn't go right or that didn't happen, not your fault, but just didn't happen to get to this one and to have mm-hmm. one go right. And so, yeah, there's a concept, you know, a lot of times, you know, clients up until the closing, what you're making is a percentage. Well, it mm-hmm. looks like a little percentage. Then they see the actual amount. They're like, oh man, that's too. I think the perception is, oh, well, we didn't earn it, or we didn't, you know, we weren't working that hard on it. Oh, there's hours of stuff getting done that's behind the scenes and it's everything from calls I made 5 years ago or 7 years ago, or relationships I was building 10 years ago, that led to this deal, or research I did, you know, 3 years ago that got me to this point, mm-hmm. and things like that. And having to stay up to date, and all the hours you spent, you know, analyzing it and checking it into it and studying it and making sure that, you know, it was the right deal for your client, and, you know, the financial analysis you put into it, and all the, you know, you get these, all every deal's got some sort of problem or some kind of hiccup or some hair on it, and you have to figure out how to solve it. A lot of times, I mean, there's a day goes by I don't learn something new, right? And it's funny, but the way I've learned to solve these problems, just ask questions. This just makes sense to me. I'm sorry, I don't think. Why is that? And no, and it's funny, you ask that question, all these experts, and they're like, I don't know. And they don't know why. And you're like, why doesn't anybody know? Let me find out why. And you find out why. And you're like, oh, if that's the case, we can do it this. We can fix it by doing this. It's amazing how many times at all these high-tech, high-powered, everything from attorneys to whatever, scientists and agents and all these other people on the line. And here I am asking a stupid question, and it ended up being the answer to the whole situation. We got the answer. So,
definitely not a get rich quick. It's a slow and steady wins the race. And if you're able to come up on top, you definitely will. And last rapid fire question, and I promise this is not a plug, but what is your favorite tool or software to use on the job?
Well, of course, it's Craigslist, right? Look, I'll be fair. There's a lot of tools that I use. I like Google Earth a lot. I like my cell phone a lot, you know, but reality, if you want to talk about software and data, you know, somewhere that gets the data, I can tell you one of the favorite things would be something within Craigslist too is going to be, you know, I have a lot of listings and things, and, you know, I won't name the other ones, but, you know, a lot of times if you look at the leads that they give you, or when you go and look at who's looked at your property and all that kind of stuff, a lot of times it's bots. I mean, they aren't even real people. You're not getting anybody. You're wasting your time calling them and stuff. But I think that the leads, Craigslist does an outstanding job of really scrubbing the junk out. And so when you're calling, you get quality leads. And sometimes maybe it's not a fit for the property. Yeah, I looked at it, but I'm really looking for, you know, that's a, you know, 80,000 foot building. I'm looking for 150. So that doesn't really fit. You know, like, okay, well, you know what? I can go find something else, right? And be able to find the deals and just having the access to the legitimate information that needs to be given about those properties versus sometimes get entered wrong, or sometimes it's just the person didn't do a good enough job. Craigslist does a good job about getting that information from you and making sure it's all the blanks are filled in. So you get a good, accurate assessment of it. And then I think the marketing tools that are with it, you know, especially with all the rules and the regulations that exist today. And there's some states you can get a lot of trouble, you know, sending out emails all the time. Right. And, you know, targeting, you know, the email marketing. And look, I'll admit, I don't like getting a ton of emails. I get too many, you know, but they do a great job of targeted marketing, and use that program. You don't need to go and send it from your computer. Use Craigslist. Nobody's going to unsubscribe from a service they're paying for, you know? And so they're going to get those. They signed up for it. You got them. And they, and the quality of the buyers and the investors and the various prospects that it has and that show up on your reports and stuff they're great. I've done dozens actually at this point. And I should have done that before I got on this call, but really should actually look at the specific number, but tons of deals, not just on the property of marketing, but on other properties and things like that, based on just using that data. And that's just one small part. You know, like I said earlier, like you really should learn all of it. And I do know a lot more than just that part, but I'm probably still not using more than 50% of it. And 50% of it's pretty darn handy and pretty darn effective. So, you know, I'd encourage anybody, if you're out there, you may learn how to use all of it. Take the time to do it. Don't do what I'm doing. You know, like I'm not
You know, I think you're getting deals done, Mike. So you're doing something right. Very, 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 very much appreciate all of those kind words. I mean, you've been, again, one of our biggest proponents for quite some time. And it's really because the proof is in the pudding. Talking to you so many times about how many deals that you've gotten done off of Craigslist, you just makes me a constant believer of what the product can do. So thank you so much for your time and being on with us here today. Before we let you go, any other parting words of advice or anything that you want to say to our listeners?
Man, just hang in there. Don't let the news or what you're, you know, what you may perceive to be happening get you. I mean, if you stick this thing out and you hustle, you're going to be just fine. And if you bought an asset, you know, get realistic, you know, and things will be just fine. I mean, it's really easy to get caught up in hearing the news and hearing negativity out there. But in reality, again, it's all a cycle. It's going to go back up and, you know, figure it out, you know, ask dumb questions or whatever, and you'll get the answers you're looking for. And you may, you know, find the solution that way and stay up to date with stuff and you'll be just good. So stick it out. It'll be good. Most people don't. Outwork.
That it definitely will. That it definitely will. We'll stick it out. We're so happy that you are. We're so happy that you joined us today. We know that you are extremely, extremely busy, so we can't appreciate it enough, you spending some time with us and sharing all of your insight and knowledge. Mike, where can people find you online if they want to get in touch? Your email, your social media, let's have it.
Well, first, you go to our website. I would encourage you to, like, you know, check us out all together at www.lee-associates.com. And I'm on, I guess, LinkedIn and I'm on all the social media sites. Don't ask me. any of that, you can find
slide into the LinkedIn DMs.
I mean, I'm good. I'm best if you call me on the phone, you know. You can find all that data on the website. Call me. I'm happy to help or If I don't have the answer, I know people in my office will probably have it. So I go get it.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Definitely give Mike a call. I've called Mike personally a couple of times. He's always answered for me. If not, he'll always call me back. So the phone is definitely your best bet. So thank you, Michael, again.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast. And sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexi podcast on your favorite podcast app, or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/crexi for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, and we'll see you next time.